So I wanted to say hello and tell you that I know you're out there, even if I haven't said hello to you, for two reasons. One, because I look at everybody, I really do. And secondly, because I have to go home and make check marks on this incredibly long list of who is here week by week. So I go, oh, Gordon wasn't here last week, he's here this week. So I know. Everybody I know you're here. And for people whose names I don't know, if you come up and introduce yourself at some point, then it won't be a mystery when I put a check mark by your name. Anyway, I'm glad you're here. I'm gonna sound like a broken record for a little while, but it's what I'm required to do. You need to sign in each time you come to class. So if you find your name on the list and you check your name off. And the reason for that is because that's what pays City College so this class can be free. So please remember to do that. If you don't do that and you forgot, tell me and I can go back to the previous week and I can adjust the roster.
Do you sign or make
no, you just make a check mark. Any mark will do, or make an X, I don't care. As long as there's a mark there, the state will accept it. If you're not registered, you have to get registered. And you do that by going to the office and asking them to register you. But when you fill out the registration form, you have to do it completely. You can't leave your birth date out. You can lie, but you can't leave your birth date out. So please remember to, if you fill out your registration form, fill it out completely. Okay. So, as I just explained, no one can sit in here who isn't registered because of legal constraints. If you're not on the our email list, if you didn't get the email that I sent prior to the term saying the term is about to start, then you put your name on the pink sheet of paper there and we add you to the email list. There's a pink sheet of paper. We added about 18 people last week, but there might be a person or two's not on the email list if you want to know what's going on.
I don't know if I got email. I don't know how to check
to
see if I get email on my phone.
You probably get email on your phone, Julie.
Can you check it out for class?
Yeah.
Can you help me?
Sure. Announcements. Dave Hughes is giving a talk tomorrow, I believe, in this room. And the title of the talk is Spirituality and Activating Energy. If you've never seen Dave, he's well worth seeing. He's an anomaly in this world, maybe unique in this world, in that he's a doctor in two very different traditions. He's a urological surgeon in Santa Barbara, and he's also a Sangoma, an initiated medicine person in South Africa. And he practices in both ways, sometimes kind of concurrently. He spends a lot of time preparing for class. He and I are friends. He's actually going to come to class in October and talk to us about another subject. But it's for him to say, I would say. October 11th. But he prepares very thoroughly for his classes. Okay, another announcement is you might know of the Mind, Body, and Soul series, which is starting at the Marjorie Lynn Theater for $22, which is pretty cheap. So this Tuesday night, Dave Mogul is going to give the first of three talks. This is the flyer, the poster, there's several on the table. Well worth your attention.
Excuse me, 22 times 5.
22 times 4, actually. If you sign up for all five, you get one for nothing. Rod Latham, the guy who's running it, wanted to make it absolutely affordable for people. And then the Consciousness Network, about which many of you know, holds various gatherings that are always worthwhile. And the one on October 4th features Dr. Gay Hendricks, who's a New York Times bestselling author, and who many of you know, who's Gay Hendricks, has been doing good stuff in psychology for a long time. So this is October 4th at At the larger zoo. And then finally, Mind Supermind. Our next Mind Supermind is November 4th, and it's Riley Weininger and Michael Kearney, who are very well known in the community and widely respected as well as they should be. You might want to get tickets for that early because it can only hold 150 people here, and they routinely draw more than 150 people from their Tuesday night gatherings. So you might want to do that. Okay, a little bit about mindfulness, and I'll introduce our guests today, and we'll learn a little bit about how to live a longer, healthier life. Let's see. In terms of the room, Lisa, can you open those two doors so we have as much airflow as possible? I think that worked really well last time. It's a hard instruction. You get wrapped up in. Okay. Yeah, so we have all the doors open now. I think he's waiting up. All right, so a little story about the climate control in here. I sent desperate emails before last meeting saying, look, why don't you turn on the air conditioning for a change? And what I found out is
there is no air conditioning.
I can't believe that they built an auditorium like this. They put heat in, but they didn't put in air. So the air conditioning is natural. Okay, so mindfulness. I'll give you a basic instruction, and I'll give you an advanced instruction, okay? Basic instruction. There are three things to do when you become mindful, and they're pretty easy to do. Feel yourself breathe. Don't change it, just feel it. Let yourself soften and open on every level. Let your mind open, let your heart open, let your body open, let your spirit open. Just let yourself soften and open. It just feels like softening, because it is. And you don't make yourself soften, you just let yourself soften. And then third, just notice whatever you're experiencing. Mindfulness is simply noting your experience. There's a thought, there's a feeling, there's a sensation, there's my breathing. You're just watching it. So I decided just for variety's sake to put a different diagram on the board. So here we go. This is the surface of the ocean. Sometimes it's calm and you're perfectly okay. Sometimes it's a huge storm and you're not perfectly okay. But if you're on the surface, you are prey to the conditions on the surface. The surface is your thoughts, your feelings, and your body sensations. Sometimes they're smooth, sometimes they're rough, sometimes they're real rough. If you sink down into the depth of the ocean, then it doesn't really matter if it's bumpy or smooth up on the surface, because down at the depth of the ocean, it's always calm. So how do you get down to the depth of the ocean? You can't force your consciousness out of your consciousness. It doesn't work that way. You just simply shift your awareness to your breathing. And when you shift your awareness to your breathing, you come out of absorption in these things. If you keep coming back to your breathing, go interior to yourself, such that it feels that instead of your thoughts being in your head, they're kind of above you and in front of you. Your feelings, instead of being inside you, are in front of you. Your sensations are, instead of permeating you, they're around you. So if you just find your breathing, back to your breathing without any effort on your part, you begin to have a distance from thoughts, feelings, and sensations, and you can see them. Sometimes you can change them, but the primary instruction of mindfulness is to just let them be as they are and keep coming back to your breathing, softening and opening, and just noticing what's happening, and the surface will correct itself. The thoughts and feelings and sensations will have a tendency to heal, to smooth out, to become more harmonious. Oftentimes, it's getting involved in these things to try to make them better that makes them worse. So the most healing thing you can do is get out of the way of healing. And you do that by coming to your breathing, letting yourself soften and open, and just noticing what's happening. That's what we're going to practice for 10 minutes. We practice it at the beginning of each session. My website is here. It has some audio files and video files that are, and some written stuff that is, says what I just said in words. And this website, swt.org/Spencer, which is Robert Bernstein's, which he just renovated so that it's even more user-friendly and attractive. If you go here, you can hear any almost any past classes, because Michael is busy recording these things, and unfortunately preserving it for posterity. If you go there, you can get any past class, you can get all sorts of materials that have been put out, you can see pictures of things that have happened in class, especially the art shows that we've had, and you can listen to guest speakers. That's all at Robert's website for nothing. Any announcements or concerns before we meditate, and then we I introduce our guest speaker. So any concerns? Right there. When we sit, you can do whatever you want. By the way, if you want to do metta, if you want to do loving kindness meditation, you want to pray for somebody, you want to, whatever you want to do in these 10 minutes is perfectly fine. But if you haven't got a program, then my suggestion is to try mindfulness. So let's sit for 10 minutes, and then we'll... one more thing about distractions. When you're mindful, there is no such thing as a distraction. There is only experience. Sometimes the surface is calm, sometimes the surface is roiled. But your job is just to open to and accept experience. So if there's a cell phone that goes off, by the way, you might want to turn your cell phones off or to vibrate or whatever devious mode you have now. If a sound happens, like from outside or inside, it's just something to pay attention to. And if you get upset, you're upset at something to pay attention to. And you always take one step back from whatever's happening. But whatever you're caught in, you can just accept that it's happening, take one step back and notice it. So, given that, you...
Your mic pump went bad.
Say?
Your battery went dead on the phone. I mean, on the microphone.
I don't understand. Say again?
It seemed fuzzy, the microphone.
The microphone isn't working right?
She's saying it sounds fuzzy.
It does. How about now? Does it sound okay now?
No.
It sounds fuzzy. Okay. What I will do after
we meditate, I have spare batteries. I think probably I'll try putting those in because that might be the reason that it's fuzzy. So we'll sit for 10 minutes. Whatever happens, it's just something to be noticed. You don't have to object to it. And if you do object to it, you don't have to object to the fact that you're objecting. You can just notice. There's my personality doing its idiotic thing again. I promise you, one day I'm going to forget to ring the bell. We're going to sit for like an hour. And it will be the most exquisite class. You probably already know this, but what happens as you sit is you relax and you discover deeper and deeper levels of holding or tension. And as you discover them, they kind of spontaneously release. So there's a progressive opening. And that opening eventually is an entire opening, an opening beyond self, beyond other, to a unitive state of consciousness. But you can't make that happen, you just let it happen. Okay, so, let me try this. Let's try this one more time. It doesn't work then.
Because Carl will need it. Is this working right now?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, he's not coming from the speakers?
Not really.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to introduce our guest for today. This is a class member that many of you know, Dr. Carl Blasius. And as I told you last week, Carl has a PhD from Caltech in Earth and Planetary Sciences and a long career as a rocket scientist. It's true, right? I was thinking about it the other day, Carl, you're a rocket scientist.
Satellite scientist.
And some of you might remember when he gave us a presentation on the Mars missions. That was the most amazing presentation, Carl, of like going to Mars. So he's become interested in neuroscience, and most especially in the biology of aging. He's actually taught several classes through McGonagall. So I asked him, and he taught us a class last semester, which was a remarkable class, on the new developments in making for a longer and healthier life. So I kind of said, Carl, is there anything else that you'd like to tell us? And he said, yeah, there might be a thing or two. With no further ado, I give the mic to Carl Blasius. And shall I open this call for you?
Sure.
If this doesn't work, tell me, and I'll go find my
other. And where do you want to be? Here or there or both?
I'll just stand here again.
Then I'll get out of the way. But let's open this up for you.
You can be up here with me, too.
No, I'm going to be over this side.
Last time we had some dialogue between the two of us, and that's helpful to understand where somebody's points of view and responding to your question. I have a fair amount of material today, but it picks up on three of the screens I gave that refers to them, and they're stored on the website, Spencer's class archive that Bob Bernstein maintained. Anyway, this is called our health span prospects update. Our prospects for improved health span, that's improved number of years where we're healthy as compared to the years or months at the end of our lives when we're seriously debilitated. And unfortunately, many people now spend months, if not years, in a seriously degraded condition, sometimes lacking their personality or totally transformed and unaware. So neurologically, this is a disaster. Other people suffer for years with other kinds of diseases associated with aging, such as diabetes, cause numerous operations and loss of sensation, declining other systems, kidneys, for instance. So we're really interested in prolonging our healthy life where we can be active physically and mentally in advanced age, not only for our individual points of view, yours and mine and our families, but also for society at large. This is an enormous burden of medical care for those who linger many years and have reduced condition. Reduce ability to take care of themselves.
Carl, can you even speak up? Is it a little bit soft for you?
It's soft.
So I believe that this is the highest that we will roll.
Okay, now see, I'll just speak louder. I started off with a quotation here from the Salk Institute. You'll see later, I got some updates on what is actually going on at the Salk Institute. And on their website, they have a section devoted to aging. That's aging biology. That's a portion of their work, the research there. This is in La Jolla, down in San Diego. And they put this quotation up there, sort of a mission statement. And getting older doesn't have to mean getting sicker. We're very committed on that. We're committed to discovering the fundamental causes of aging and finding ways to prevent and treat age-related diseases. So this is, they share that with many other research institutions and individual scientists around the U.S. and around the world. The goal now is being focused on, let's find out what the fundamental processes of aging are, the processes that underlie multiple age-related diseases like cardiovascular disease, dementias, cancers, type 2 diabetes. There's a whole suite of problems that we, our probability of acquiring goes up with age. So that's the thrust. And I've given two presentations before, and this is an update and extension. But this is a remarkable time. There are things that happened just in the last week that I had to consider putting in this presentation because they're remarkable. And I'm also reviewing some of the things that happened last time because I think they're important to point out and how there's remarkable things that I reported on less than a year ago. We've now got even more interesting things that will become more applicable to us as human beings in clinical situations sooner. Okay, there's an organization on the internet called Kurzgesagt that produces educational videos, little animations. And I wanted to start out to set the stage for the science of aging, the motivation, and at least three areas of science that are being worked on. This dates from a couple of years ago, but it's still current in the sense that I will be talking about some of these three topics that we cover in this video. One is purging senescent cells. These are cells that have stopped replicating in our body because they suffered some damage. And they recognize that they shouldn't replicate anymore. But instead of dying by a natural process, the first nutrient called apoptosis, they hang around and they pollute their environment and cause local chaos. They cause inflammation in the local environment and disrupt the activities of the organs or tissues that they're in, such as in their muscles or in their joints. Osteoarthritis is a good example. So purging senescent cells from our body has been proven in mice, our mammal cousins, to reinvigorate them, rejuvenate them to some degree. So it'll be covered here. NAD plus is an essential chemical for a number of basic biological processes, including energy production in our cells and maintaining our integrity of our DNA. And that's the second topic they'll talk about, is restoring levels of NAD plus that tend to decline with age ingesting or getting intravenous precursors of this NAD plus to improve the functioning of our body in general. And then administration of stem cells, you may have heard about this promise for 10 or 20 years now that stem cells are going to cure lots of things. Well, the progress has been slow, but there's a lot of trials going on now, and I'll talk about one. But they also cover that in this video. So let's see if we can
bring up this video. Only 7 minutes long.
Carl, do you think that there's closed captioning on it? We'll find out.
I was going to play it offline.
If you play it in that player can display the subtitles.
Health is the most valuable thing.
Go to the top.
What we tend to get back to when we lose it.
It says subtitle at the top. You can turn it on there. It's part of the PLC player.
So it needs a file.
I guess you didn't record it. Usually it's in there.
This link isn't working.
Well, because it has a
link. It works in a PDF file. I can't play PDF.
Well, also, you have a hyphen,
and
you have to get rid of a hyphen.
Can you copy that and then YouTube and put it in?
Yep.
That works. Scramble.
Yeah.
You scrambled.
The HTTPS is out of order.
Yeah, you scrambled.
One
undo. Oh, I see.
Do it one undo and then it'll go back.
I scrambled.
There you go.
There you go. Now they'll make my work.
Yeah.
But we tend to forget that until we lose it. We're living longer than ever before, which is great. But an unforeseen consequence of this is that we also spend a larger and larger portion of our lives being sick.
Go left to CC. Yeah, to CC, that'll do it. Just click on that. Should say.
This can happen.
Oh, get rid of YouTube Premium. It screws everything up. On the lower left?
Skip. It's on.
Okay.
Just play it. It's on.
It looks like it does.
Yeah, get rid of the thing on the lower left. Skip trial. That will, yeah.
Let's try it again.
Okay, let's try
it again. Getting old currently means spending more time in pain. So scientists are trying to shift the attention of the medical community from optimizing lifespans to optimizing health spans, the part of our lives during which we're disease-free. To do this, we need to attack the root cause of almost all bodily defects, aging itself. Unbeknown to most people, the science of aging has made enormous progress in the last few years, with human trials about to begin in the near future. Let's look at three examples of discoveries that might benefit people who are alive right now. One, senescent cells. Your cells have an expiration date. Each time one of your cells divides, it copies its chromosomes. Because of the way this works, they lose a tiny bit of DNA at the ends. This could be catastrophic, so to protect themselves, we have long segments of DNA called telomeres that sort of act like the stiff bits at the end of shoelaces, but they shrink with every cell division. In some cells, after a number of divisions, the telomeres are gone and the cell becomes a zombie, a senescent cell. Senescent cells stay around and don't die. The older you get, the more of them there are inside you. They harm tissue around them and are linked to many diseases that accompany old age, like diabetes and kidney failure. But what if you could kill them off? Scientists genetically engineered mice so that they could destroy their senescent cells as they please. Older mice without senescent cells were more active, their hearts and kidneys worked better, and they were less prone to cancer. Overall, they lived up to 30% longer and in better health than average mice. Since we can't genetically engineer all of the cells in the human body, we need to find another way to get rid of our senescent cells. But how do we kill them without harming healthy cells? Most cells in the body commit a programmed cell suicide when they're damaged, but senescent cells don't. It turns out that they underproduce a protein that tells them when it's time to die. So, in a late 2016 study, mice were given an injection of this protein. It killed 80% of all their senescent cells, while causing almost no harm to healthy cells. The treated mice became generally healthier, and even regrew lost hair. As a result, there are a number of new companies looking at treatments involving senescent cells, and the first human trials will start soon. 2. NAD+. Cells are made from hundreds of millions of parts. There are structures, machines, messages, and the catalysts that make reactions happen. All these parts constantly need to be destroyed, cleaned up, and rebuilt. As we age, this process becomes less effective, and so parts become crumbled, bunched up, or are removed slower. Or they are no longer produced in the quantities we need. One of these parts is NAD+, a coenzyme that tells our cells to look after themselves. At age 50, we only have about half as much in our bodies as we do at age 20. Low amounts of it are linked to a whole bunch of diseases, from skin cancer to Alzheimer's, cardiovascular disease, and multiple sclerosis. But NAD+ can't enter cells, so we can't get it as a pill. But scientists noticed that other, more flexible substances could enter cells and would then turn into NAD+ inside. In 2016, multiple trials on mice showed that they boosted the multiplication of skin, brain, and muscle stem cells. They were rejuvenated, had a higher ability to repair their DNA, and had a slightly increased lifespan. This even got NASA interested, which is looking for a way to minimize the DNA damage astronauts will be exposed to from cosmic radiation on Mars missions. There are human trials being planned right now, but it's too soon to say if this will boost our healthspan or even lifespan. But NAD+ is a serious candidate and could become the first human anti-aging pill. 3. Stem cells. Stem cells are like cell blueprints that sit at various places in the body and copy themselves to produce a steady flow of fresh young cells. But they decline as we age, and so we decline too. Without new parts, human bodies break. In mice, scientists observed that as the stem cells in their brains disappeared, they started to develop diseases. So they took stem cells from baby mice brains and injected them directly into the brains of middle-aged mice. More specifically, the hypothalamus, a part that's involved in regulating a lot of bodily functions. The fresh stem cells reinvigorated older brain cells by secreting microRNAs that regulated their metabolism. After 4 months, brain and muscles worked better than those of untreated mice, and on average, they lived 10% longer. Another study took stem cells from mice embryos and injected them directly into the hearts of older mice. As a consequence, they had improved heart function, could exercise 20% longer, and weirdly enough, their hair regrew faster. What all of this tells us is that there is not a single magic bullet with which to cure aging. It requires a complex array of different therapies. We can kill off senescent cells to clear away the junk, give ourselves fresh new stem cells to fill the gap, all while regulating the metabolism of the other cells using medication. This video comes with a big caveat. After all, these studies have been carried out on mice. There's no guarantee the same therapies would work in us to the same extent, but they are proof of concepts. To learn more about how we can modify our own health span, we need human trials. We've only covered a tiny part of the research that's being done right now, and only scratched the surface of these ideas. The field of health span extension needs more attention and funding. If it gets it, all of us might enjoy growing old without pain.
Do you know if those were tried cumulatively? Like all of it together?
I think they're talking about individual experiments by different groups. And there's been a lot of successes in mice, but we'll talk about osteoarthritis trial for shed cells in a few minutes. Okay, just what is it? We've got some hints of machinery that you break down from the first effect video, but there was a paper called Hallmarks of Aging, a review paper that was written a number of years ago, about 2014, I think it was, in 2013, and it's become a good basis for talking about all the common changes in systems at the cell level that accompany aging, and this is helped scientists focus on topics and relate one topic to another. And if you look in towards the upper right, there's a chromosome represented, which represents the telomere shortening or the other disruptions in the chromosomes. Down at the bottom is knife and fork. This is representing nutrient sensing associated with type 2 diabetes, where your insulin and your blood sugar levels are out of whack and you suffer from consequences. Cellular senescence is over there, represented by a leaf here for some reason with holes in it. So these are a variety of different cell level changes that accompany aging. Over on the right, there's something called I think they've written it here, epigenetic alterations. We have a genome, which is basically the DNA code, it's in our cells and the chromosomes, but on top of the DNA is something called the epigenome, which are regulators of the genes. The genes are encoded for various proteins and other growth factors, and whether they're produced or not is controlled by something called the genome. Epigenome on top of it. So all of our cells have identical copies of DNA molecules, but they vary from tissue to tissue and from age, from young to old, with variations in this epigenome layer on top of it that allows certain genes to be transcribed into proteins in our cells, prevents other genes to be okay. The epigenome sets which of the genes are transcribed and what kind of cell the individual cell will be. So changes in the epigenome create the differences between a muscle cell, a kidney cell, and a bone cell, and they also govern development. We all came from a single cell with one type and developed into a multi-trillion cell organism with hundreds of different types of tissues. And that's all due to the epigenome. And as we age, there are patterns of changes in the epigenome that take place. Yes?
Tell me if I'm right about this. I've been telling people, I might be telling my classes wrong thing, so he's the expert. So, where is this epigenome? Every cell in your body, right? Tell me when I go wrong, okay? If I go wrong. Every cell in your body has 46 chromosomes. They're identical in every cell. So how come one's a bone cell, one cell's a heart cell, one cell's a skin cell, one cell's a muscle cell, when they have the same instructions, the same DNA in every cell in the body? Okay? So how come
That's the epigenome. That means on the surface of the genome, on the surface of the DNA, are these histones, things that the DNA is wrapped around, like little spools over there in the green quadrant. And there are also things called methylation groups that are attached to the DNA that prevent transcription of the gene at that point. So, and there are other types of regulators of gene transcription that keeps the cell, encourages the cell to express something or prevents the expression of a particular gene. So you don't want calcium to be deposited like in your muscle, but you do want it being deposited in your bones. So you've got to turn on something and turn off something systematically between the tissue to have appropriate organization to your multicellular body.
Okay, so just to become clear, so the reason that one's a bone cell and one's a muscle cell is because the epigenome tells certain parts of the DNA to work in a bone cell and different parts of the DNA to work in a muscle cell.
Right.
Same DNA, but some of it's turned on and some of it's turned off by the epigenome, right?
Yeah.
Now, is the epigenome the same thing as the junk DNA between the...
No. The junk DNA was a temporary concept that you can polish. DNA molecule. That's same as our genes are DNA molecules. Epigenome are a chemical layer on top of the DNA, which is another molecule. I'll present it. I'll talk about it right now. I came up with an analogy. You may or may not like it. It's cookbook analogy. That imagine you've got a town of a trillion households, and they all have this cookbook that has 20,000 recipes in it. Okay, every house has the same cookbook, but every household has a different set of markers, bookmarks in that cookbook are the recipes they use. So the epigenome is a pattern of markers or bookmarks of recipes that are used. The genome is the entire cookbook. So, for your household, you are distinct from every other household by the recipes that you actually use. Or maybe your family has a distinct set of bookmarks in my household, like a tissue. So, is that useful?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got arthritis and shoulder arthritis.
Yes, we'll talk a little bit about arthritis, osteoarthritis in a minute.
Okay,
so this raises questions. How are these different hallmarks of aging associated with one another? These things overlap to some degree, and which are associated with which diseases. Are some of these more fundamental than others? This was not resolved by this classification. You know, maybe some of these are cause and effect relationships between them. So there's lots of research to be done, but this is a way of organizing thinking about the aging process. Okay, so I gave an update in October, and I reviewed progress in two areas, which we'll not talk about, one of which we'll not talk about much today. That's dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And what I said there before pretty much holds. There's a lot of research focused on diagnosing these conditions much earlier, the concept now being that they take decades to develop, and that treatments, looking for treatments early in the disease is probably what we want to do. Also, there are efforts to find conditions that may trigger dementias of various kinds in the brain, such as infections, autoimmune diseases, toxins in the brain, breakdown of blood vessels. I don't really have anything new to say about this problem right now. There's lots of work still going on, a lot of money being expended. Second is senescent cells. We talked about those. In June of this year, the first company I'm aware of that had a phase one trial for a senolytic, that's a drug that would kill off senescent cells, reported their results, and this is Unity Biotechnology and their drug was UBX0101 targeted osteoarthritis. I'm going to show you the three slides from their presentation in June so you can see what the results of the phase one clinical trial were. Okay, this is how they describe their pipeline of drugs that they're trying to develop. The very top line targeted musculoskeletal system is in the third column is osteoarthritis, and the progress of this drug is all the end of phase one. That's why they're doing this report. But you can see they have drugs in development. They're declaring for ophthalmology, for age-related eye problems, including macular degeneration and retinopathy and other problems. They even named some of them because they're testing them presumably on animals at this point or on cells. And then they're also planning to develop pulmonary focused drugs for the lungs, for fibrosis and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and another problem that I'm less familiar with. And then they're also developing senolytics for multiple organs at one time, and liver, kidney, and neurodegenerative, which would apply to brain disorders, and then also cognition and kidney disease. So these might be senolytics that would work on multiple tissues or multiple organs. Okay, part of the focus of a phase one trial is safety and tolerability. You know, are there any adverse effects of giving the drug to a person? And is it? And they also gather some efficacy data at this point, and it's usually a pretty small number of subjects. Here they found no serious adverse effects. Those would be AEs. And the adverse effects that they did see pretty minor, and they didn't show any dose dependency. And you can see that there were like sinus problems, headaches, you know, kind of things you might get from injecting a foreign substance, temporary or permanent allergic type reaction. So this is not a serious problem in a phase one study. And the number of people involved, they broke it into part A and part B, it's small. And part A, they had 34 subjects receiving the medication and 14 that got a placebo. And in part B, they had 20 receiving the drug and they had 10 receiving the placebo. So you gather your efficacy information by looking at how the reaction to the placebo compared to the reaction to receiving the actual drug in various doses. Okay, and they had several measures of efficacy that they collected. I'll just show you one. This one was a pain rating, and there's three curves over here. The top one showing the least effect from week 1 to week 12 on the right was the placebo. The placebos have effects, you know, our mind is powerful. But then the middle one, the dashed line, is a low dose of the medication, and the solid line at the bottom was a high dose state. And there was because the error bars don't overlap, there was a significant finding here, although it's a small number of people. They concluded that at high doses, the probability that this pattern of response was just a random or a chance event was less than 1 in 100. So that's sort of how you go through a formal calculation process based on the measurements and the number of subjects, and you come up with the probability that what you're seeing is just a random result. And it looks pretty significant. And this should mean, unless there's other data that comes out, that this drug will probably proceed into a phase 2 trial with a lot more subjects. involved, and they'll be focusing on efficacy.
I have arthritis in the shoulder for the past two months.
A lot of people suffer from arthritis. It's a serious problem. That's why many companies, including this one, are focusing on developing more permanent treatments that wouldn't require taking drugs that are anti-inflammatory, like ibuprofen.
Ibuprofen doesn't help.
It doesn't help you. Is that what you're saying?
She's asking if it does help.
Oh, it's symptomatic relief. So you know whether it helps, whether it reduces your pain. Or improves your mobility. So you're the judge of that. I'm sure it doesn't work for some people, and it doesn't work for others.
But what I want to say to Julie is the drugs that are currently being researched might give you more permanent help, or better help.
Right. Rather than taking a pill a day or several pills a week, this might be a more permanent solution. Maybe you only have to take the medication once a year, or 5 years, or once in a lifetime. That's the hope. Okay, and the other topic I covered last time was cell reprogramming, and this is an area of really exciting developments. I talked about work in modifying this epigenetic code so that a cell that has a dysfunctional epigenetic code, in other words, some of the genes are being expressed that you don't want to have expressed due to a disease or just old age, the epigenetic code tends to get corrupted with age. You get noise in it. It's one theory of aging. And so the epigenetic, and I my analogy. Anyway, this started as a research field 2006, which is fairly recently, when Shinya Yamanaka and research associates found that with just four genes, turning on four genes, they could reprogram a totally differentiated skin cell into essentially the cell that was present when our body first started to develop in utero, a cell that could have daughter cells that developed into all of our hundreds of tissues and our trillions of cells in our entire body. And since then, scientists have figured out basically how to reprogram almost any type of differentiated cell into any other differentiated cell, like turn a neuron into a skin cell or a skin cell into a bone cell. They figured out this code of activating genes to produce these growth factors.
Carl, let me just underline this. That's just an amazing thing. First, Yamanaka found out how to take. It used to be, if you want, you know, stem cells are good, right? They help. They're going to help medicine a lot. It used to be that you had to get them from fetuses, and that was really a big
ethical problem.
Yeah, and so in some places like this country, it kind of got shut down, and that's too bad in the sense that this has huge promise in medicine. So Yamanaka found out how to just tweak four genes in any adult cell, right? And make a stem cell out of it. So that got away from the problem of having to go to a fetus to get the stem cell. Now you can take any of your cells, tweak four genes. It's really simple. And you get this stem cell that you can make it into any other kind of cell. And then scientists figured out how to take any cell in your body, tweak a couple of four genes still?
Well, or three or four.
Three or four, and then get any other cell. Yeah. So if you go to a lab, you can say, make a heart cell out of my skin cell, and they go tweet, 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 and there's a heart cell. You understand the implications of this?
Well, yeah, the implications were great for creating transplantable tissues or organs, but wow, maybe we can transform your own body so it can regenerate in place. I mean, you can grow a heart on your arm, or you can grow a heart from adjacent tissue in your chest cavity. So that's a really exciting thing. And last time I talked about this work that's going on down at the Salk Institute, led by one of their professor scientists, Juan Carlos, is Sua Belmonte. Maybe I'll call refer to him as Belmonte, Professor Belmonte. he has done some remarkable work in bringing this process of self-reprogramming into fruition in inside of animals, not in the petri dish, but treating cells within a living organism to create differentiated cells. And the peak accomplishment was in 2018, essentially just last year published, when they for the first time, they generated within an animal, this was a mouse again, an entire organ from another type of tissue. So they created a wound where he lost all the skin, such as a burn victim, you can imagine, and they isolated it to prevent the surrounding tissue to gradually fill in this missing skin, like it would in a normal healing process. They treated the underlying tissue, the non-skin tissue, to express three of the Yamanaka factors, if I remember correctly. And they regrew skin from the bottom up, from the virus sub-skin tissue, regrew the skin, which is an entirely different tissue. It's the organ epidermis of the body. They grow a new organ in a body from a different organ. Amazing accomplishment. First time ever. That was published just last year. Okay,
so one thing we got to tell them that is the problem with transplants is you get it from somebody else, mm-hmm. and your body has a tendency to reject it because it's foreign. Suppose you could make stuff, you can make a new heart out of your own body, then you wouldn't get rejected, right?
Right. So transplants that are specifically derived from your own tissue are a great idea that's being pursued elsewhere. But growing a transplant in your body, that's even better. you don't have to do multiple operations. You don't have to figure out how to attach a new aorta to a cell of an old aorta and keep you alive while your heart is disconnected. You know, let's grow it and just cut off the old one and pick it up. Okay, well, anyway, that was the first time we grew a new organ from another organ in a live mammal. But the early application would be for burn victims, for instance. Serious problem of healing, eliminating the need for skin grafts, correct? Okay, this reprogramming is done. We get the genes into the cells that we want to reprogram using a virus, an engineered virus that has been cleaned up, and we put in the virus just the genes that we want to activate in the cell. And these small chromosomes, small circular chromosomes or plasmids, as they're called, can exist temporarily in the infected cells and be destroyed by the cell, or they can integrate into the genome in the cell, or they can last a long time and see small circular chromosomes, and they can have switches that turn the genes on and off, so you don't have to just let them run at whatever speed. They can have controllable chemical switches attached to them. We'll see more of this.
What's the gestation period of these cells before they can be activated as...
That's a good question. The virus is called adeno-associated virus, and I think it must just be a matter of hours to a few days. It's a question of what's your success rate? How good is your vector at just getting into the cells and infecting them? And of course, it depends on the environment and the details of the viral vector you've chosen. I'm not familiar with the statistics on that, or the subtleties of designing these viruses. I know the general virus type is being used now most often by the scientists because it's a pretty clean engineered virus that can engineered for this purpose in animals, and it's also been used in people. There's an alternative way of getting these little bacterial circular plasmid chromosomes into our cells, and that's by using electrical current. And there's a group at Ohio State University that's using small electrical currents that disrupt the cell membranes temporarily and allow little plasmids to get in. So there's alternatives to using viruses, but they haven't been demonstrated to be superior. But people are experimenting with that. I talked about Ohio State a little bit last time, but I took it out of here. There's nothing new to report. Okay. There's a new paper that just came out this year out of Professor David Sinclair's research group at Harvard University, and he had collaborators in this. And the paper title is pretty amazing.
So, you gotta yell more.
Reversal of aging and injury-induced vision loss by TET-dependent epigenetic reprogramming. So this is in an animal model again, in mice. And they showed that they could reverse the epigenetic changes associated with normal aging and debilitating aging. And they could use this to revive self-healing abilities of an earlier stage in life or juvenile system, or to remove the epigenetic programming just associated with old age. And so in mice, they revived more useful regeneration. And what they were doing is treating the eye, cells in the retina, in such a way as to promote their useful ability to regrow along the optic nerve bed toward the brain to overcome, like I said, degeneration of age or injuries. So they injured the mice by crushing the optic nerve, or they just treated old mice that had decreased eyesight and obvious tissue differentiation due to degeneration of old age. And they put these the genes that were required, three of the Yamanaka factors, and also genes for two factors that control aspects of epigenetic change that are called methylation enzymes that control the methylation. They found this was necessary. They had to activate genes associated with changing the pattern of epigenetic pattern on the genome. And they were able to help these mice repair the damage to their sight, to the optic nerve. And they were also able to overcome degeneration of eyesight associated with just normal aging. But the surprising thing was they looked in detail at the pattern of epigenome in these mice, and they found that the pattern that they had after the treatment actually corresponded to a younger biological age. This is called the methylation clock, or the epigenetic clock, developed by Professor Steve Horvath at UCLA. And this clock, this measurement of our biological age, is the strongest correlation with our chronological age of any measure of biology that we come up with, any combination of tests or other measures. People felt that the telomere length was a good indication of age, but it's much, much poorer indication of our actual chronological age than this methylation clock. So deviation from this methylation age, of the methylation age from our chronological age, can tell us whether we're aging more rapidly or slower than the general, not the average population. What they found when they looked at the mice that went through this experiment, they actually became younger. Their cells were significantly younger. This is a first. Manipulated the epigenome systematically for purposes of improving eyesight, either after injury or just aging, and we come up with a younger epigenetic age.
Yeah. Are they modifying the genes in the virus? The virus replicates and then transfers the genes to the cells within the mice?
The viral genome, in this case, remains separate from the regular genome, but it produces these proteins, enzymes, and other transcription factors that reprogram our regular genome by their presence. They trigger a reprogramming process that we have within all of our cells inherently. We don't know how it's stored, but our cells contain a record of useful patterns of epigenetics. The useful epigenome is stored in our cells, and through reprogramming, we can recover that and regain a more useful pattern of cell health.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the process.
Uh-huh.
The virus gets into the mice.
And infects the cell. Uh-huh.
And infects the cell. So it's actually entering the cells.
Absolutely.
Takes along its genome, uh-huh. Produces the proteins and enzymes, mm-hmm. which then affect
the whole cell.
Original mm-hmm. genes that were in those cells.
Correct. Yeah, it causes this reprogramming activity that we have available to us if it's properly triggered. And the activity of the genes that are inserted by the virus sets off this program and causes the self-reprogramming. Yeah.
Is it primarily the CRISPR tool that's used to edit the genes?
It may be, but there are other tools that dip in engineering adenoviruses with for use in genetic experiments for many, many years, long before CRISPR. There are a lot of tools that can be used. I don't know what they use in this paper, but I had to look at this paper.
It may just be me. I'm not speaking for the crowd, but is there any place we can read about this in English?
Right. Well, yeah, I'm hoping there will be some good popular videos. There are, this is covered by a new book that just came out this week by David Sinclair. And so I can refer you to that. I haven't read it yet because although I pre-ordered it, I haven't received my copy yet. But he's given some interviews, and I'm sure it's an excellent book. So I would suggest ordering a copy of David Sinclair's book. He's a great speaker, and should. Well, this is his vision of a primary way we're going to attack the debilitating stage of aging. Through our health span is through reactivating some genes selectively. So, yeah. I've got that on the last slide.
Okay, so let me, can I make one, because of Bernie's question. So just so that you don't feel, different of us have different degrees of understanding of this because of what we've learned before. So I'm gonna go to the very simplest, just to make sure everybody goes, okay, I'm on board, which is in each cell in your body there are these, there's DNA, right? There's the stuff that tells the cell what to do.
That's the genome.
That's called the genome. In each cell, there's the same bunch of DNA. Every cell has the same 46 chromosomes, okay? And that tells the cell what to do. You can put new instructions, a new genome into a cell with a virus. You can stick the virus into the cell, and it has, it's carrying other instructions, other DNA, and that other DNA can then tell the cell what to do. So you can change what the cell is doing by sticking new DNA into it using a virus.
Yes, as long as it's active. Yeah, and that's a great analogy. Yeah.
You're starting up a program, you're giving a jump start to a program we have hidden within our genome by putting in an artificial engineered genome.
Well, and that's normally what the virus does, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's infecting it with...
Right, and you take out the bad stuff the virus does, engineer it out, and you engineer in the things you want to do, and you do all these bazillion experiments on mice to find out what the minimum changes are to get the desired result. And sometimes you have a surprising result like this one. Wow, they're younger. Not only did we clear up the visual problem, but... They're biologically younger. Whoa. Okay, so DNA methylation, or the epigenome, is an essential element of biological aging. In fact, it may be one of the fundamental causes of biological aging, or maybe the cause. We don't know how much to generalize that, but this is a major finding, major discovery.
Because I'm going to say it again. Okay, methylation. You got these big long DNA molecules, right? And on top of them, you put these things called methyl groups, and they change the way that the DNA works. Here's the DNA, and if you stick these methyl groups on it, it changes the way they work.
Stops them from working, yeah.
Yeah, so you don't want too many of these methyl groups on your DNA, because they make your DNA work less well. Right.
Yeah, or you don't want to remove the essential methyl groups, and then you've got your tooth gene producing dentin in your heart or something. You know, that's terrible. And we have calcification of unwanted parts. Okay, I mentioned David Sinclair. This is a development in this area of NAD plus replacement that we saw in the cursor doc video. And in 2018, his group published research describing mechanisms for rejuvenation of the circulatory system in aged mice. They restored this NAD plus in the mice by giving them precursor. It's a dietary supplement. And they found new mechanisms that connect the health of our blood vessels to the presence of NAD plus sufficient quantity. I'll try to activate a video.
As we age, the tiniest blood vessels in our bodies wither and die, reducing the blood flow to organs and tissues. Vascular aging causes many diseases, cardiovascular, neurological, muscle wasting, frailty, and even aging. Here at Harvard Medical School, we were...
Can you try to put the CC on also for this? If there is one, yeah. And it's not working. Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
We could not do full screen.
Okay, that's it?
Full screen.
This is Professor David Sinclair, I mentioned. This is Professor David Sinclair, I mentioned. It's having a problem
loading.
Okay, so you might, maybe you don't want to make it full screen. You want to make it smaller and maybe it'll... And then start it and stop it. I mean, pause it.
Oh,
and
it's on high D.
Pause it and...
Reverse this process in mice. Setting the stage to rat. Vascular aging causes many diseases, cardiovascular, neurological, muscle wasting, frailty, and even aging. Here at Harvard Medical School, we've reversed this process in mice, setting the stage for radical new therapies to help people. The new study has unraveled the cascade of interactions between blood vessels and muscles, Endothelial cells, which line the walls of blood vessels, are essential for the health and growth of the vessels. And as endothelial cells age, blood vessels begin to atrophy and die. Blood flow to many parts of the body diminishes. Organs and tissues begin to function less well. Blood vessel demise hits muscles especially hard, because muscles rely on a robust supply of blood for their function. This process can be slowed down with regular exercise, but only up to a point. Over time, even exercise fails to stave off blood vessel demise and muscle loss. The new findings have cracked the mystery behind this process. As our blood vessels age, they become deaf to the signals from exercised muscle. This actually leads to the muscle shrinking as we get older, and therefore we're less able to exercise to grow new blood vessels. A vicious cycle indeed. The two key players in the crosstalk between blood vessels and muscles are a molecule called NAD and a protein called SERT1. NAD boosts SERT1, which in turn enables the conversation between muscles and blood vessels. But both NAD and SERT1 decline as we age. They can no longer perform their role as the interface between the muscles and blood vessels. In our new study, we gave mice NMN, a chemical compound commonly found in the body and previously shown to boost NAD levels, which in turn boosts SERT1. These mice had better endothelial function, blood vessel growth, and improved blood supply to their muscles. And what was most striking? These animals' capacity for exercise improved dramatically. In fact, the old mice treated with NMN had up to 80% greater exercise capacity compared with the untreated old mice. These results, I believe, can help millions of people who have lost their mobility or simply can no longer exercise, either through frailty, disability, or old age. This sets the stage for new medicines that will be able to restore blood flow in organs that have lost it, either through a heart attack, a stroke, or even in patients with dementia.
I was going to say, anybody want to go in with me on a world supply of NMN?
Is it something we should
buy? We gather our grandchildren there.
Carl, this NMN, is it something we could get?
Yeah. Yeah, you can buy it online. The professor takes it on a daily basis. We talked about that.
Use the mic, please.
And it's, but he doesn't recommend it because
he talks about it in his book, and he does take it himself, but he doesn't recommend it. He's not a medical doctor. But it is available as a dietary supplement if you want to try it. There's another one called NR, or nicotinamide riboside, that's been available for quite a few years. That was developed in part by his mentor at MIT. And so these things have gone. Nicotinamide riboside, there's been a little bit of study about the effects of it on people and their health. NMN is in a trial right now at a hospital near Harvard Medical School in Boston, Brigham and Women's Hospital. And so this year there may be like phase one results from that trial on using NMN in human beings rather than mice. Yes?
Why is it online if it hasn't been tried already?
Oh, there's lots of dietary supplement chemicals that you can buy and take. You know, there's all kinds of things. You know, vitamins of various kinds and minerals.
Say the name of it slowly.
NMN. Nicotinamide mononucleotide. Yeah. Nicotinamide mononucleotide. And you can find more on it under Dr. Sinclair online, or just search for NMN and you'll find people selling it if you're interested. I can't recommend it because of why or anything like that. But you can do research on it, and the results in mice are really striking.
You take it?
Yeah, actually I do. I can try that, so I take all the forms that are available.
Do
Simultaneously.
Do you take an R too? R?
Pardon?
Do you take an R as well?
Yeah, I take both of them. Yeah.
Is it true that you are 153 years old?
Yeah.
No, only one baby. Okay. Yeah.
Well, have you noticed any changes in yourself from taking
this? I think I'm fairly healthy, but no, I started out pretty healthy, so I haven't had any aging. I think nothing I can describe to that particular couple. It's like insurance. It's cheap insurance. It doesn't apparently do any damage to the mice. Let's see. We were going to go. I think we're on our last line.
How old are you, Carl?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'm 72.
Are you a man?
Okay, so I refer to Dr. Sinclair's new book that just came out this week on the bottom of Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To. And this is his kind of blueprint for continuing this research and making some significant changes in society by reducing the debilities, the standard debilities of old age burdens. I have one more little video, Good Morning America. You want to try to see that one?
Yeah.
It was just 2 days ago or 3 days ago. Let's
buses and bathtubs. You can't skip laundry, but now you can skip adding detergent. Fill once and wash up to 40 loads. Select Whirlpool washers with low and gross sensor.
How we can crack the longevity code, stopping or even reversing aging, an expert's new book, Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To, says aging can be treated. Jeannie Chang, our good friend, is here with that. You have our attention, Jeannie.
Absolutely. Well, it's intriguing. Well, imagine if we could all live happily and healthily into our hundreds, 120. Imagine being able to meet your great-grandkids, no problem. Well, one Harvard geneticist believes that that's not only within our grasp scientifically, but there are things you can do today to begin to reverse your aging process.
Is there a way to try to slow down brain aging?
The mythical search for the fountain of youth is underway here at this Harvard Medical School lab.
So this tells us which genes it makes you sharp.
Renowned biologist and genetics researcher David Sinclair chronicling the secrets of how we age on a molecular level in his new book, Lifespan.
If I took your blood right now, I could tell you how old you are biologically. Now that's a very accurate clock. Scary, right?
Like the crystal ball you don't want to look into.
But here's the exciting thing. Now that we have this clock of age, we can ask what accelerates it and what slows it down and what reverses it. Literally turn that clock backwards by a lot.
Decades worth of research suggests turning back the hands of time involves putting the body under stress with high-intensity interval training, cold exposure, or calorie reduction diets like intermittent fasting.
What we've been working on in this lab for the last 20 years is that these diets are putting us into a state of biological stress. The body gets shocked. It thinks that times are bad and it might not survive, so it fights back with everything it's got. Fights against heart disease. Imagine 40,000 years ago running away from wild animals. These days you get on a treadmill, but it's the same thing. It tells your body that there's a danger, that there's a threat to your survival.
But Sinclair notes the next anti-aging frontier may involve chemically boosting the body on a cellular level with medicines and supplements to treat aging as if it were a disease. He says it's already showing promise in labs.
Medical history is littered with solutions that work in mice that don't translate to humans.
Well, yeah, that's fair. Mice are a lot easier to cure diseases and aging than humans, of course.
And yet, 10, 20, 30 years ago, the idea of taking a pill as a fountain of youth seemed like science fiction.
It still seems like science fiction to most people who haven't thought about it. And that's why I wrote the book, to explain how there's 20, 30 years of world-class science around the world. We get together every few months and talk about this. that shows that you can quite dramatically slow down aging, and even more recently, we found that you can reverse the clock. Not just in mice, but possibly even in people.
And we should note that researchers are currently investigating an anti-diabetes drug, metformin, as the first anti-aging drug. And in his book, David Sinclair is fully transparent about his diet and exercise routine, what he takes every day as part of his anti-aging regimen. But he's quick to point out that he's a scientist and not an MD, so he never specifically recommends.
And he's 50.
Uh-huh.
Like a job.
Exactly.
Exactly.
It's time that we have to adjourn. So if you have questions for Carl, why don't you come up right now and ask him. My overall reaction to this, which is kind of, I feel two ways at the same time. I feel that this is really wonderful, and I kind of feel like I wish they'd hurry up. Anyway, can we have a round of applause for Carl?